Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Oh, bodega cat. Bodega. Oh, I'm sorry. She got me with the earworm. Oh, my goodness. It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Live from the green space today. And when we're in the green space, you can watch the show as well as listen. Just go to WNYC.org. We're streaming video right on the homepage, or you can use the WNYC Facebook page as well if you want to watch us instead of listen to us today. Now, One Book, One New York is back. It's a citywide contest to get New Yorkers reading the same book at the same time. It's like a giant citywide book club. Right now, they're in the voting period. You can go to nyc.gov/onebook to choose the book you think everyone should read from the list of finalists. And I'm really pleased to be joined now by Julie Menon, the commissioner of the Mayor's Office of Media Entertainment, and all four living authors of the five nominated books: Jennifer Egan, author of Manhattan Beach; Hari Kunzru, author of White Tears; Imbolo Embwe, author of Behold the Dreamers; and Esmeralda Santiago, author of When I Was Puerto Rican. Now, the last book on the ballot is a classic by the late James Baldwin. It's his If Beale Street Could Talk. And here to represent that is the film director and writer Barry Jenkins. His last film, Moonlight, won the Oscar for Best Picture, and he's working on the film adaptation of Baldwin's Beale Street. And he is with us on the phone. So what an all-star lineup we are honored to have with us. Welcome them all to WNYC and the Green Space stage. Wow. And Barry Jenkins, are you there on the phone?
I am. I'm here.
Good. Just checking the line. So, Commissioner, why should the whole city read the same book at the same time? What's the idea behind this?
Well, Brian, this is the second year we've done the One Book, One New York program. And last year we had such a tremendous response from New Yorkers all across the city. Part of the program is obviously about financial literacy, but part of it also is to engage in a civic conversation about the city. All five books represent iconic New York neighborhoods and really talk about issues that are particular to New Yorkers and themes that really resonate with the city. So we encourage New Yorkers to read these five books. We have over 5,000 copies in the public libraries. So all 219 public library branches in New York City have copies of all of these wonderful books. And during the month of April, we're encouraging New Yorkers to vote for the one book they want the city of New York to read.
And before we hear from the authors, I see the point of this is also to celebrate and support the publishing industry here in New York, a major New York industry, and our independent bookstores and libraries.
Well, that's exactly right. So that was one of the policy reasons why we launched the program last year, and that really did work. Sadly, many independent bookstores throughout the city are closing, and we really want to counteract that. Through the One Book program last year, we were able to increase sales at independent bookstores by over 400% of the winning book, and so we want to be able to repeat that again this year.
Great. Now, all five of these books take place at least partially in New York City. So I wonder if you can each take a minute to talk about the role of the city and its neighborhood or neighborhoods that it takes place in as muse or character. Barry, will you start with the Harlem that James Baldwin wrote about in If Beale Street Could Talk? The book came out in 1974. Was it set at that time?
It is. I think it spans. The book is nonlinear, so it jumps around from the childhood of the protagonist through the present day story that's being told. So it takes place primarily in Harlem, but also touches on the village, both east and west. It's just really a snapshot of the city in transition at that time. And making the film was this really beautiful experience because, you know, a few people knew who I was, but everyone knew who Baldwin was and his love of Harlem. So I think it's a very wonderful cross-section because the main character, Fonny, is a guy born and raised in Harlem, but he feels most comfortable, as he describes himself, amongst the freaks of the village, where he just wants to buy a loft and sculpt. And then the world intervenes in this way that sets Baldwin on this path of telling a procedural against the backdrop of a Harlem Love Story. So it's been a really wonderful experience to adapt.
Jennifer, your book title is a neighborhood name, Manhattan Beach, and the Brooklyn Navy Yard shows up as well in the period of World War II. What about Manhattan Beach itself? Were you trying to show your readers?
Well, Manhattan Beach has kind of an amazing history. I mean, it started out as a place where these huge Gilded Age resort hotels were very exclusive. Then those disappeared, and it was a place where people went sort of, there were summer bungalows. During the war, there was a Coast Guard training center and a Merchant Marine training center there. And now Kingsborough College is there. So it's a place that in a way really manifests the constantly changing New York landscape. And also my real subject was the waterfront of New York. And it's also, you know, it's right there, kind of relating to the water at all times.
Now, listeners, if you have a question for any of these five stars, literary and film stars who are with us for this segment in the Green Space, you can call in. You can consider this like a candidate's debate, right? So if you want to ask them a question, why should your book win the... If you can frame a specific question around that, we would love to hear it at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or anything you've always wanted to ask as a reader or a moviegoer of Jennifer Egan, Harry Kunzru, Mbolo Embwe, Esmeralda Santiago, or Barry Jenkins. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And of course, those of you here in our Green Space audience, just raise your hand and we'll come around with a mic. So continuing to go down the road, the row here, Harry, White Tears takes place largely in Greenwich Village, but elsewhere as well, in a contemporary story set basically today, would you say? Why the Village?
Well, it's not contemporary completely. It's a sort of story that drags the present day back into the past. It's a lot to do with the sounds of the city, to do with the music culture, and to do with record collecting. And I got fascinated by the... a little coterie of blues record collectors actually centered around a guy who lived in Hawaii in Williamsburg just after the Second World War, who developed the taste for the blues as a musical form, you know, outside its original Southern roots. And, you know, that fed into the folk revival, all the singers and musicians who used to congregate in Washington Square in the 50s and 60s, the cafe culture of Greenwich Village. So all that is wrapped up into a story which kind of shuttles between the past and a kind of hipster present day, which is more kind of Greenpoint and Bushwick and Williamsburg.
Do you have overlap with Baldwin? Does the song Beale Street Blues come up?
There's no actual Beale Street reference, but you can't really, you know, you can't quite escape Baldwin in this city.
Mbolo, Behold the Dreamers takes place somewhat in Harlem and around the city, as the protagonist is a chauffeur for Lehman Brothers, and a Lehman Brothers executive and his family in the early aughts, right before and during the financial crisis period, which of course crashed Lehman Brothers. I'm curious if you know Baldwin's Beale Street, and if you have any comparison of his 1970s and other Harlem representation to yours from maybe 30 years later.
No, I don't know about Baldwin's Beale Street, but I used to live in Harlem myself, and I got inspiration for this novel while living in Midtown. And one of the family the chauffeur works for, they live in the Upper East Side. So the novel came out of my fascination with New York City. I moved to the city in the mid-2000s, and it was the very first time that I found myself feeling at home in America. So in some way, it was an homage to my new hometown.
Had you been elsewhere in America and felt less at home?
Yes, very much so.
Where was that?
New Jersey.
Wait, that's the same thing.
No, I love New Jersey. No, just something about New York City made me feel very comfortable, even as an immigrant and as just a person. I felt very welcome.
Esmeralda Santiago, when I was Puerto Rican, first takes place in Puerto Rico, then in Williamsburg, around Graham Avenue and Bushwick in the 1960s. This is a neighborhood that's changed so much in the past 50 years or so. What Bushwick-Williamsburg story, essentially, were you trying to tell in the book?
I was trying to tell my story of a rural Puerto Rican girl arriving in a big city and having to understand and make sense of a whole new culture, new climate, new language, and being a 13-year-old girl and realizing that my mother expected something very different than what I was experiencing in Brooklyn and then later in Manhattan. So it's really based on what happened to me. And when I think about Brooklyn, it's such a different place from the place that I knew that it's practically unrecognizable to me.
Barry Jenkins, let me go back to you because I know you have to go a little early. So I just want to give you the first chance, and then we're going to go down the row, to sing the praises of the book you're here representing, If Beale Street Could Talk. First, why should people vote for James Baldwin's If Beale Street Could Talk?
Now I am a politician. Baldwin to me is New York, and there's something about this novel that really resonated with me, which is, you know, we're all kind of unified by the same thing, which is either the, you know, the absence or abundance of love in our life. And Baldwin just does a great job of, one, depicting that abundance and absence both within an evolving city and also, two, its citizens. And I just think it's one of Baldwin's lesser-known works, I would say, in the sense that when I tell people I'm working on Baldwin, they assume it's Giovanni's Room or another country. But If Beale Street Could Talk, it's just this beautiful love story to Baldwin's home. And it's interesting because he's an author who spent so much time outside the country that this very searing portrait of New York was, I think, his love letter to the city.
I'm curious, since this book club project is to start conversations all over the city about, you know, the issues and the stories, et cetera, that are raised in whichever book gets selected, what kinds of conversations do you think people will be having if Beale Street Could Talk is selected?
I think, one, people will walk around the city and marvel at what the city has become because it's such a searing snapshot of what the city was. I think also, as well, when you read this book, you know, a lot has changed since the early 1970s, but just as many things remain the same. And I think in that sense, because we think of Baldwin as being a snapshot or being this voice from a very particular time, that time, when you read this book and hopefully when you watch this film, you'll see more things are the same than they are different. But I think in that way, it'll be a very amazing jumping off point of a conversation. Even to listening to Esmeralda, I'm reminded that there's a subplot in the book where Harlem and Puerto Rico are kind of connected because our main character has to journey to Puerto Rico to get to the bottom of this thing that happened. Because the woman has left New York and left Harlem to return to Puerto Rico. So I think it's just, for something that is almost a time capsule, it's very, very relevant today.
Now, we have a little surprise for you before you go. We have the actual song that Baldwin's title refers to, Beale mm-hmm. Street Blues. Can we play a little bit of that right now?
If Beale Street could talk, if Beale Street could talk, married men would have to take their beds in war, except one or two who never drink booze, and the blind man on the corner who sings the Beale Street Blues. He says,
Louis Armstrong on WC Handy. Does the song show up in your film adaptation?
It does not. You know, the song is from one particular period, and I just didn't imagine that our characters would be listening to it. But like most things with Baldwin, it's about the spirit and the essence of the thing. And even just hearing that rendition of it, there's definitely a darkness and a melancholy, but there's a beauty as well. And I think at this time, you know, the late 1960s into early 1970s, you could very much say that of the city and of Harlem in particular.
That's great. Do you have a release date for the film?
Oh, man, I'm getting ahead of myself now. I cannot say.
That's okay. All right. Well, now you have some number of people who have advanced word of the fact that a movie version is coming out. Thanks for coming on today and representing the book.
Thanks for having me, Brian, and congratulations to all the wonderful authors.
And we're going to continue in a minute and ask you all the same question. What kind of a conversation would the city be having if your book is selected for the One Book, One New York? And we're going to go to this break with another piece of music just to represent a little news that broke in the last day. Kendrick Lamar's album, Damn, has become the first non-classical, non-jazz album ever to win the Pulitzer Prize for Music. So we're going to go to the break with a little bit from that.
If I didn't ride Blade on Curve, would you still love me? If I'm in my mind at work, would you still love me? Keep it 100, I'd rather you trust me than to love me. Keep it a whole 100, don't got you, I got nothing. Hey, I got something.
Hold up.
We gon' function, ayy, no assumption, ayy, feelin' like Tyson with it, knock it out twice, I'm with it, only for the night, I'm kidding.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, live in the green space today. When we're in the green space, you can watch us as well as listen to us. We're streaming live video at WNYC.org or on the WNYC Facebook page. And we continue with the four living authors of four of the five books that are finalists in New York City's One Book, One New York contest, a citywide competition to get New Yorkers reading the same book at the same time. It's like a giant citywide book club, and still with us after we heard from Barry Jenkins representing James Baldwin's If Beale Street Could Talk are Jennifer Egan, author of Manhattan Beach, Hari Kunzru, author of White Tears, Mbolo Embwe, author of Behold the Dreamers, and Esmeralda Santiago, author of When I Was Puerto Rican. So let's continue what we started with Barry. Jennifer, what kinds of conversations would people be having in their book clubs if Manhattan Beach is selected?
Well, I mean, there are three major characters in the book. One is a young 19-year-old woman who is working at the Brooklyn Navy Yard. This is during the fall of 1942, so World War II. So she's one character. Her father, who is an Irish-American sort of dock worker, longshoreman, who has abandoned the family during the Depression, and then a gangster whom Anna senses has had a business relationship with her father, and whom she, her path crosses in the period that she's working at the Navy Yard. So those are sort of the major characters. One of the things that was really striking to me, having the book come out this fall, it's very much about female strength in some sense. Anna works at the Navy Yard, as nearly 5,000 women did during the war, and she ultimately is able to become a deep-sea diver working on ship repair, which is something women were not allowed to do. But one thing that was interesting about the Navy Yard is that for the first couple of years that women worked there, they were not allowed to go on ships. And the reason was because who knew what the men might do in these compressed spaces with women. And women objected to this, and ultimately it really behooved the Navy Yard to get the women onto the ships because they were slighter and more limber and they could get into these tight spaces. But it was interesting with the eruption of the Me Too movement to think about the fact that, you know, in some ways we're still dealing with these same problems. I mean, I laughed reading about women not going on ships and thinking, oh, like men can't control themselves in a compressed space with a woman. Well, maybe not as well as we thought. So that is an unexpected conversation that I think perhaps would happen.
Who thought they could? Never mind. Hari Kunzru, what about if White Tears is selected? What kind of conversations do you imagine?
I think it might be conversations about ghosts. White Tears is a ghost story, really, in essence. It's about two young white record producers in the present day who fake a 1920s blues record using some audio of a singer that they've picked up in Washington Square Park at the chess tables there. And they put this out on the internet. They do it as a sort of calling card for their record producing business, and, you know, to show that they can give new things the patina of age. And then somebody gets in touch with him, an old collector, and says, well, where did you hear this record? And they say, well, we made it up. And he says, no, you didn't. And the possibility opens up that instead of faking something, they've actually channeled something from the past that wants to be made felt in the present. And, you know, New York, like any big city, but more than most, really, New York is a city that has layers, and not just physical layers. There are kind of cultural layers to this place. There are ghosts of past versions of the city that you encounter traces of whenever you're walking around. And I got to know the city when I came here 10 years ago by recording as I walked around downtown and picking up all these like little kind of micro worlds of sound that you find in the city. And that
we should work in radio.
I would love to make radio.
Let's talk after the show. We talk a lot here about fake news. This is our first conversation about fake music. Mbolo, how about if Behold the Dreamers is selected? What kind of conversations do you imagine at these book clubs around the city?
So when I started writing the book, I was writing a story set around the financial crisis. One of the characters was an executive at Lehman Brothers. And I thought it would be a book about, you know, what it was like, you know, living in New York City during the financial crisis. But most people read the book, they want to talk about the issues of dreams, because the book is called Behold the Dreamers, and it has a lot to do with the American dream, but just any kind of dream, and what happened to these families and all of these characters when their dreams were threatened, and the choices they made to see their dreams come true. A lot of it is about family and friendship and love and just being human and searching for happiness. I mean, it is very much a story about the pursuit of happiness, especially as immigrant, but also as anybody who lives in this country today and has to deal with issues of class and race.
The term the Dreamers, of course, is so commonly applied now to that particular group of immigrants who were brought here illegally by their parents as children but grew up American. Is this a reference to that in any way, the title?
No, this was a reference to just having any dream of a better life. It refers to the immigrants coming here with dreams of achieving the American dream.
And Esmeralda Santiago, if When I Was Puerto Rican was chosen, what kind of conversations do you imagine?
I think that my book is about what happened to me as a rural child in Puerto Rico in what I thought was the last generation that would grow up the way I did, which no electricity, no running water, being in a rural part of the island far away from the metropolitan area. And then on September 20th of last year, Puerto Rico became just like the place that I grew up in. And I think that were my book chosen, and I do hope that people will choose all these books, actually. I've read all of them. They're wonderful. I think we're all looking at New York City from very different through different eyes, but very often seeing very much the same thing. And my book mostly takes place in Puerto Rico, and right now millions of Puerto Ricans are living like that. And then the last part of it is about what happens when you come to a place like New York from a community like that, and this is what's happening to hundreds of thousands of Puerto Ricans who are having to leave the island in the same conditions that I left it, and then having the same experience in the United States. Mm-hmm. And I think there will be a lot of discussion around those kinds of issues. And I think especially for the Puerto Ricans who read it, you know, I did not go back to Puerto Rico. I was brought here. I did not go back. But a lot of them will have to make that decision. Am I going to? Will I be able to?
We got one call from a listener as you were going down the row there, and I think Sandra in Manhattan wants to electioneer for your book, Esmeralda. So Sandra in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. I am living with the most incredible coincidence, and some of them are marvelous. I have a group of ESL students who I'm teaching, and this is the second time in the past few years that I chose Esmeralda Santiago's book. And when I heard this morning, I thought, oh my goodness, that's the one we have to open up. The discussion that has evolved in my class with foreign students who come from Greece, Ecuador, Russia, and Japan. They sound like different countries, but the struggles, there was so much identification with all through the book, even though many of them did not come from very, very rural, except for two of them. So I think that as the book evolved, they evolved, conversation evolved. As an ESL teacher, I'm very concerned about dialogue and sharing and growing because of it. We got to know each other through the book.
That's it.
And for New Yorkers, with the multitude of populations here, how important it is to see that movement, that struggle, the change in in Esmeralda, who is called Negi in the book, as she comes to Brooklyn and then to New York and eventually auditions for to be as part of a special high school and then eventually to graduate from Harvard. I mean, wow.
Sandra,
this book is the winner.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you, Sandra.
Thank you for your service teaching ESL classes. And you're Esmeralda's agent, aren't you? No, I'm kidding. thank you very much.
Not only that, in half in about 10 minutes, the part of the class is coming to my home with lunches traditional to their country that we will all share.
Awesome.
And talk
wonderful.
About.
Thank you. Thank you very much again. We're almost out of time. We'll take one more question from here in the green space. Hi, make it real quick.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
It's on.
Hi, my name is Raymond Lotta. I'm from Revolution Books in Harlem, and I wanted to pose a question to everyone, but let me first just quickly say that we are living in this incredibly dangerous moment with this Trump-Pence regime hammering into place, you know, a fascist America. This is what it wants to do, and it is really imperiling humanity and the planet. And our bookstore is a place where people come to find out about why the world is the way it is and how it can be radically different. And right now we are projecting this film by Bob Avakian, which is the most comprehensive explanation of how we've gotten to the place where a regime like this is in power and what needs to be done. And our bookstore has been in the crosshairs of attacks by fascist thugs unleashed by this regime. Here is the question that I wanted to put to the panel. These are unprecedentedly dangerous times, the most dangerous times in 70 years, the threats of war, nuclear war. You've written wonderful works. We have those books in our store. We have discussions about them. What I'd like to ask is, how do you see the responsibility and challenge of being a creative writer of imagination
Wow.
in dangerous times like these?
Thank you. And you obviously don't need an agent. But well done. You know, we are so out of time. Who's burning to answer that question? Who would really like to answer that question? Any one of you. Hari, it looks like...
I'll say something. Yeah, I mean, I think fiction is always political. It's political because you choose certain stories to tell. You put yourself in the position of trying to present the world in all its complexity. And I think if there's one thing that unites all these books, it's a vision of New York that is absolutely opposed to that that kind of exclusive vision of America. This is an incredibly inclusive version of the city. It's a city that is for all New Yorkers, you know, newer ones and native New Yorkers.
I would add one quick thing. Having spent a lot of time thinking about the wartime New York, there is a strong streak of gangsterism in American culture, and it goes way back. And that's really what I ended up writing about in this book. This didn't come out of nowhere. You know, this is part of us in a certain sense. And so I think owning that and understanding the history of it is important. And that's, we fiction writers are always trying to connect the past to the present.
Now, Commissioner Julie Menon from the Mayor's Office of, let me get it right, the Mayor's Office of Media and Entertainment. I'll give you the last word. As I mentioned, an event that people might be interested in if you're enjoying this conversation, this Thursday night, April 19th at 7:30, the four authors here, as well as director Barry Jenkins, who was with us representing James Baldwin's If Beale Street Could Talk, will join a panel discussion as part of the Pan America World Voices Festival. That'll be at the New Schools Auditorium in the Alvin Johnson J.M. Hall. The event is free and open to the public on a first-come, first-served basis. And there's a link to RSVP for that event on the One Book site, which is nyc.gov/onebook. And Commissioner, is that also how people vote for one of these books to do a citywide read on?
Absolutely. They go to the website, nyc.gov/onebook, as you said, and please vote. Voting is open all throughout the month of April. And then on May 3rd, we are going to announce the winner. And for the summer months, we're going to be doing events all around the city celebrating the winning book.
Commissioner, thank you. Authors, thank you. Green Space audience, please thank our amazing guests. Thank you all so much. Good luck to all of you. May the best book win. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we'll be right back with the comedian and activist Liz Winstead. Stay tuned.